Welcome to The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. First Merchants Bank, helping you prosper. Get ready to learn more about the Columbus Blue Jackets players and coaches, as well as find out what's going on this week in the NHL. Now let's join Bob McElligott for The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank.
Can you believe it is the last Wednesday of August? That's right. Next week, it'll be September, and that means next week we are so much closer to Blue Jackets training camp. Welcome to the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. Coming up later on tonight, you're going to hear from a brand new Blue Jacket, a guy that was acquired on draft day. Almost said trade deadline. It's not that. He got traded, but he got traded on draft day from the Colorado Avalanche to the Blue Jackets. Miles Wood will be with me a little bit later on. But right now, I'd like to bring in Jean-Luc Grandpierre, who, of course, you can see on the FanDuel Sports Network doing Blue Jackets pregame, postgame, and intermissions. And Jean-Luc, first of all, thanks for coming back again. And I need your expertise today because, as I said, it's the last Wednesday of August. Training camp is, well, you're knocking on the door of training camp right now. Let's go back to your days as a player. Where was your mindset when you got to this point with training camp just a couple of weeks away?
Well, Bob, glad to be back. Thanks for having me again. Where was my mind at this time? I mean, at this time, you're basically on the ice every other day, probably 5 days a week, to be honest with you. And you just start getting ready to compete. And, you know, the workouts are just as intense. You're, you know, a little less weights, a little bit more skating. And obviously, you want to try to get your conditioning up to par because that's a big key of a training camp, especially, you know, when you're in a role like I was, it's like you're fighting for your life, right? So those training camp numbers better come in pretty strong. So that was definitely my main focus at this time of the year, just, you know, more on ice, ready for, you know, the grueling season that is that NHL season, 82 games and, you know, 84 starting in 2 years. So it's not easy, but yeah, a little less golf, a little more workout.
yeah, no doubt. Because the goal is for a player, when you show up for training camp, you want it to be, well, maybe not camp. You want the season to be less work than you put in during the summer. And you want all that work you put in during the summer to pay off for if it is a grueling training camp for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're getting ready for that testing. And it sounds crazy, but a new bargaining agreement between the players and the owners, they got rid of the testing. And that's one thing that for some players, especially role players, put so much focus on the fitness testing just to get those number high that you almost forget about hockey. So I'm kind of glad that's going completely away. Now, if you're a superstar like a Zach Werenski or a Boone Jenner or, you know, a Sean Monahan, those testing results, it doesn't matter, right? I mean, you just show up, you have a pulse, you're good to go as long as you pass the physical. But for some other players, it gives you a better chance to really get ready for the season. And that's one of the things I really thought was a big win for the players.
So you weren't a fan of the numbers. Were you ever afraid of the numbers you might put up when you got to camp?
No, I loved it. But I just realized now that you talk about it today, 15, 30 years after I'm done, is that I put too much focus on those numbers. Because if you look at the testing, I was always first, second, or third in every single category, except from the 2 mile run where I was absolutely horrible. This body was not meant for long distance, but for sprints. And, you know, as a hockey player, you don't train to run 2 miles. That's not the type of sport that hockey is. This is like soccer where you're running all the time. You know, it's stop and start fast, right? So for me, maybe I focused a little too much on the test. So I was a big fan of the testing because I was always in the top, you know, 2-3 every training camp.
I never understood the running either. I mean, this isn't football. It's not how fast you run. It's not how far you run. I mean, you got to skate, obviously, but it seems, and I remember back when John Tortorella was here and there was that 2 mile run, it was almost more of a psychological thing that the players had to prepare for and go get over. It was almost, that was the most intimidating part of the training camp for some guys, wasn't it?
I still remember the 2 mile run, and that's when Gord Murphy first came with the Blue Jackets and assistant coaches, like, hey, we're doing this great thing in Florida. And Gerard Gallant was the head coach. And I remember coming to training camp for that 2 mile run, and I knew I was going to struggle. I mean, it's like 230 pounds at the time, and I was fit, but he built to run 2 miles in, you know, under 12 minutes or whatever they wanted us to do. And I remember showing up, we're in Upper Arlington on this track. It was hot and Nikolai Zverev literally just got picked up from the airport and lapped me. I mean, now you have to remember this is only 8 laps, but I mean, he literally lapped me off a flight from Russia. And I trained all summer for that damn test and still couldn't compete. And me and Freddie Bryant Wade literally dead last, the two of us. And Gerard kind of looked at us like, huh, aren't you supposed to be an athlete? And I was like, not for this one, Gerard. Sorry.
As long as Zverev wasn't wearing that big fur coat that he would wear in the wintertime. Because if he wore that and still beat you, that'd be a real, you'd probably get released.
He probably would still have lapped me. I mean, it was unbelievable how fast he ran that 2 miles. But, you know, I beat him in all the other things. That 2 mile test, he was incredible.
So that's where the players are, right? I mean, and some of them will be trickling into town. Were you a guy that liked to arrive early or just right before camp began?
Yeah, I was always there early. From even when I was in Buffalo, I'd show up probably 6 weeks before training camp. And then in Columbus, I actually spent my off season here mostly. So I was in town training at the facility all summer long. So for me, it was never a thing like, hey, I need to get back in town. I always loved being in space. And, you know, that's kind of like how I fell in love with Columbus, is really spending my off seasons here and get to know the city a little more. Cause obviously during the season, you don't have much time to do that.
No, you don't have any time to do that. You know, especially for the young guys, a lot of them live downtown. Their life is going from where they live to going to the arena to going to the airport and going to another city and coming back. It's almost like, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, for young guys, in many ways, being at home and being on the road are somewhat similar, because as you get older and you got a family, then maybe you move out to the suburbs and, you know, your kids in school and all that stuff. But when you're young, and a lot of guys on this team are, it's a similar lifestyle, no matter whether you're here or somewhere else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, you know where to rink, the airport, and maybe the grocery store if you cook, but that's pretty much it. There's not all that much downtime during the regular season. So it's kind of like, you know, when you hear guys, you know, free agents say, hey, what's Columbus like? You know, you have to talk to guys that have been there for a couple of years, most likely more established players that really know the area well. Cause as a young player, you still, you know, I remember in the off season, my first off season, I discovered so many things I didn't even know exist in Columbus. Your sole focus is hockey and not, you know, being a tourist and to learn a little bit more about your environment. So, an NHL season is long enough, right? And, you know, they're looking at like 8 months of your life from start to finish. And you would think you would have time to discover a little bit more of the city, but you really, really don't until, like you said, you become established, have a family and kids. And now instead of taking naps all day, you're going to school and doing things with your kids or with your wife. But, you know, when you're single, you're not doing much. So the couch, my bed, the grocery stores were pretty much my favorite places to go.
Nap all day. Once upon a time, naps all day was unthinkable. And boy, that sounds really nice now.
It really does. I roll in a couple of naps here and there. And my wife, you know, after I retire, she's like, what are you taking naps for? And I was like, good question. I have no clue, but it feels good. So good night.
Look, if you want the yard mode, I need this nap, right? Yeah, I need it. It's part of my DNA now. It's how I'm built.
You know, we're creatures of habits, and some of those habits, they kind of just get stuck with you because you've been doing this since you're like 12 years old. So it's not because you're retired that you're going to change everything about who you are. And I, you know, I'm a big believer in naps. They just got shorter now.
Oh, indeed they have. There's no doubt about that. And if we haven't put you to sleep yet, I've got more with Jean-Luc Grandpierre coming up in just a few moments. First, I want to tell you to make sure to get your Blue Jackets ticket plan for the 2025-2026 season. You can choose the matchups that you want. There are plans that start at just 11 games. There are savings up to 40% just for you. Plus, enjoy the flexible payment options and bonus tickets that you'll get for family and friends. To find out more, just go to bluejackets.com/ticket plans. This is the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank on 97.1 The Fan.
We used to have a billboard with our host's face on it, but only ugly people work here now.
You mama say you ugly, hey!
The Fan, Ohio Sports Destin.
live, talking with Jean-Luc Grandpierre, former Blue Jackets defenseman. And, of course, you can find him on FanDuel Sports, pregame, postgame, intermissions for the Blue Jackets. Okay, I gave Jean-Luc a little bit of a homework assignment, if you will. And now we're going to test him and see if he was on it. There was an article in The Athletic this week. And basically, the article, not basically, actually, the article, it's titled NHL Front Office Confidence Rankings, How Fans Feel About Every Team in 2025. So The Athletic pulls fans, they get all this information, and then they rank the teams 1 through 32 as far as, you know, the confidence in the front office. And the Blue Jackets in this, and this is why I gave Jean-Luc this this assignment, because there were a couple of things that jumped out at me. I was reading down through the list, and I was reading it in order, and I'm going through, and everything's fine, and I get to number 14, and it says Colorado Avalanche, and they're, you know, talking about what the fans of Colorado are saying about the Avalanche. And one thing that jumped out to me in this, it says they got a massive haul for Charlie Coyle that included dumping Miles Wood's contract. They shored up the blue line with Brent Burns at a cheap cost. Anyway, so I saw that and I was like, well, wait a minute, like a huge haul. What is a huge haul? Where are they getting this huge haul thing? So I scrolled down and I find the Blue Jackets ranked at number 16. And the description there, it says that, where is this? It says they paid an exorbitant price to acquire Charlie Coyle. Jean-Luc, correct me if I'm wrong here. Look, they traded Gavin Brindley, and I understand Gavin Brindley has a lot of upside, and he's got great potential. He was a second-round pick. He's a small forward. I mean a small guy, and this is a team that's looking to get bigger based on what the guys they got. There's your example right there. Also, what, a third-round pick and a conditional second-round pick, I think, went in that. I just don't see this as an exorbitant price. Am I wrong?
I mean, you're not wrong. You look and time will tell, right? Now, if Gavin Brindley end up on the line with Nate McKinnon, at the end of the year, and, you know, he's point a guy a game this season, maybe you're looking back on this and you're like, eh. But to me, you have to look at the need for each team, right? For the Blue Jackets, clearly, the center position is somewhere that, you know, 2 years ago, this team had Boone Jenner as a center, and that was pretty much it, right? You had Cole Sillinger and Boone Jenner, Sean Corrali. And you look now with Kent Johnson. You got, you know, we don't even talk about Kent Johnson or Voronkov or Boone being centers anymore because they've gotten so many centers. So that's their priority right now. I think Coyle, they wanted a right-handed centerman. That was a need that they had. They cleaned that up. And then, yes, Miles Wood, a player that Colorado said, if you're taking Cole, you have to take Miles Woods as well. But you look at the identity of this team now under Dean Evason. I mean, it just screams Miles Wood and Charlie Coyle. So as a general manager, you create a roster, and hopefully you can accommodate the need of your coach. And for Dean Evason, guys like Miles Woods, guys like Charlie Coyle, that's cup of tea for the need of the team. And nothing against Gavin Brindley, but, you know, Dean Evason and Gavin Brindley style, they just don't seem like the perfect match. So for the need of the Jackets, I think that was the appropriate price. Now for Colorado, it's a different story because they're like, okay, Woods had some injury problem. That's not quite the speed or the type of play that the Colorado Avalanche and Jared Bednar like to play. To them, he was very expandable. And same thing for Charlie Coyle. They want to bring speed. They got speed with Brindley. Hopefully it works out. So I think both teams got what they want out of the trade. So to say that the Blue Jackets paid an exorbitant price for him, I don't think is fair.
All right. So you passed. You get an A on your assignment.
I got an A. I got
very
an A.
Good. Yeah. Very good break.
See what happened next year, right? With these rankings, because I was looking at all the other teams and I was just laughing my whole way down that list. Cause you look at the Blue Jackets, right? They were ranked 16th, right? How many teams make the playoffs in the league? 8 on each side, right? 16. So Jackets end up 17th. So they're right about where they finished in a ranking as far as the confidence. Teams that are higher are going to be higher and lower. But the one that really jumped to me was the Nashville Predators, because you look at last season, their ranking was so high. And this year, let me take a look real quick. I want to say they went from 10th to 31st this year, simply because it didn't go right for them this year. Yeah, they were ranked 10th last year after signing Stamkos and signing all the Marchessault. And then now this year, after one season, they're like, forget it, 31st. So it just shows you a little bit. It's a result-based business. There's no result-driven business, no doubt about it. So is the opinion of management.
I'm glad you brought up Nashville too, because that's the way they're perceived, because they were so much underperformed last year. But I got to tell you, I'm not exactly thrilled about that being an opening night opponent, especially on the road, because you have a Blue Jackets team that's got expectations on it now, and that's their thing to deal with. In Nashville, and I just saw an interview with Philip Forsberg that the guys from the fourth period did when they were over on that European tour, when they were talking about, have you guys talked throughout the summer? Have you gone through this? And he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. He said, of course, we've got it figured out in May, but we got to play it again. I mean, that's going to be a hungry team to show everybody what happened last year was just a mistake. That's not going to happen again.
Absolutely. Big, big mistake. Now, they had some injury problems. It just didn't mesh well with that last season. Obviously, they have to address that. But Justaros didn't have a great year. Roman Josi was hurt. And you look, they got rid of Dante Fabro, who, find stuff on the first pair here. They got rid of Carrier, who would find himself on the first pair in Montreal. Literally, they got rid of all guys. So it was a good team. It did not mesh right. So to me, I think you got to expect a completely different season than the Nashville Predators. Wouldn't be surprised if they make the playoff and make a run. It was just a bad season. And unfortunately, that happens once in a while. They make such a splash during free agency that you did not expect that. So that was a big, big disappointment.
It seemed like Barry Trotz at times was acting like a coach who was a GM, meaning, you're putting together almost a fantasy hockey team with the Steven Stamkos and that kind of stuff. But even more so, to your point, Jean-Luc, Dante Fabro just doesn't work here anymore. Let's let him go. And he's right on waivers. And all of a sudden the Blue Jackets have a top pairing guy for Zach Werenski, because, in the coach's mindset, if this guy stinks today, we don't need him. And the GM is usually the more, he's projecting and all that stuff. So look, I like Barry Trotz. I think he'll do a fine job in this role, but when everything goes bad, it's very easy to pick that apart and say, you can't manage like you're still a coach, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that about the coach mentality, because you look at it and typically the first thing a GM does is fire a coach. And Barry Trotz, former coach, went the opposite. It's like, it's not the coach's fault, it's the players. And all of a sudden, he's like, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone. And he kept his coach all year, which was a huge, huge surprise. Let's not kid ourselves. So let's see if he's going to give him as much leash this season as he did last year. But I think at some point, if that doesn't work out, the coach is probably going to have to go, unfortunately, in Nashville. But I expect to bounce back from them.
Yeah, Andrew Burnett was not only has had success coaching elsewhere, but was also a player for Barry Trotz, too. So there's that connection. But you're right. That leash is so much shorter in year two. There's no way they're going to go through that again, because then, it reflects on you as a general manager. So you... But as they always say, Jean-Luc, once you push that button and you pull the trigger on getting rid of the coach, then all the focus comes back to you. So it's best for all of them if the players just do their jobs and they all keep theirs.
Yeah, it makes it much, much simpler. There's no doubt about it. But also, you also have to be careful, because he's going to look back on the two guys they let go for next to nothing in Carrier and Abro, and see how much success they're having somewhere else. And you're thinking, yeah, these guys on our roster, both of them on our D-core, and we got rid of them. So, yeah.
Well, that's the way it goes sometimes. Jean-Luc, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And before you know it, we'll be sitting in the ice house, freezing, watching training camp.
Can't wait.
There he is, former Blue Jackets defenseman and current TV color analyst Jean-Luc Grandpierre. Coming up next, you're going to get to meet one of the newest members of the Blue Jackets. Forward Miles Wood was traded by the Colorado Avalanche to the Blue Jackets in late June on draft day. Hear what he thinks about his new club he's about to join for training camp next as the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank continues here on 97.1 The Fan.
No hot takes, no dancing, plenty of stupid. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Welcome back to the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank. I'm Bob McElligan. Right now, I'm really pleased to be joined by one of the newest members of the Blue Jackets, a guy we haven't even met yet, but you're going to meet him right now, and that is forward Miles Wood. And Miles, first of all, welcome to Columbus. It's been a couple of months now since you were traded. You were traded on draft night from Colorado along with Charlie Coyle here to the Blue Jackets. Have you had an opportunity to kind of get everything figured out in your personal life over these last couple of months as you get ready to come to town for camp?
Yeah, you know, the guys on the team have been great to me so far. You know, a lot of them have reached out to me and told me where to live and stuff like that. So I do have a spot. And I'm just in the process now trying to move all my stuff from Colorado out to Ohio. And I can't wait to get there and meet all the guys and the staff.
Tell me about that night, because you were actually on vacation. You were out of the country when you got traded, weren't you?
I was. I was on a bachelor party over in Ireland playing golf. Yeah.
You know, that could be dangerous because at a bachelor party, you could wake up the next day and say, traded? Or am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. It was a pretty wild experience, but I couldn't be happier. And I'm just super excited to get the season going here.
Did you have any inkling that you might be leaving Colorado? Were there any indications that they might be looking to shop you somewhere?
I think towards the end of the season, I kind of had a feeling, but if it was actually going to transpire, I didn't think so, but, that's just professional sports. And, like I said, I couldn't be happier, to be in Ohio and, start playing some hockey there.
Blue Jackets are going to be your third organization. You started with the Devils before you went as a free agent to Colorado. As you come here, is it any easier, for lack of a better word, that you're going to do it with a teammate from Colorado with Charlie Coyle coming with you?
Yeah, and I also know Dante Fabro, and I played World Juniors with Zach Werenski. So I know just a few guys there, but, you know, the hockey world is so tight-knit. The first day, you know, you make friends so easy. It's the first time I've ever been traded in my career, so... it's kind of a new experience for me trying to, you know, move out of Colorado to Ohio. So, just trying to, just can't wait to get there and start playing some hockey.
Being an East Coast guy, are you excited to get to Ohio? I mean, I know you were born in Buffalo and now you grew up and you live in Massachusetts. Are you happy to get a little bit closer to home?
Yeah, for sure. I think my parents are more happy about it because, you know, the games start at 9 o'clock on the Eastern time zone when I was out in Colorado. So they're happy that I'm back in the East Coast time. And for me as well, you know, like you said, you know, you're a little closer to home. It's been good and just can't wait.
All right, let's go back for you to where it all began, because you grew up in a hockey family. You were born into a hockey family, right? I mean, your grandfather was a coach at Princeton. Your dad played for a couple of teams in the National Hockey League. I mean, was there a stick in your hand from a very early age?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. You know, my dad had, he was fortunate to play for 11 years or so. And, he put the stick in very early into our hands, and he had us on skates probably 2 or 3 years old. So, yeah, it's been a fun process to where I am now, wouldn't be here without my parents and family, for sure.
You know, it's kind of funny because when you have if you're a player in the National Hockey League and you have kids, like, when you look around sports in general, I mean, you can find in just about every sport where there are you know, a next generation that makes it to the highest level and they play NFL, Major League Baseball, whatever the heck it is. But it seems like that happens a lot in hockey. And I don't know. I haven't studied it enough to see if it happens more so than those other sports, but it really seems to be something that is, it just kind of happens, and it happens a lot. I can't think of the right word here, but I mean, your dad wanted you and your brother to play, obviously, but was there any pressure to, as far as how much you played and how good you got and what level you got to?
No, there was no pressure from my dad at all. The only thing he wanted, my brother and I had to do is just be happy and pursue what you wanted to pursue. You know, if we start at a young age, my dad only allowed my brother and I to play 4 months out of the year. You know, he was big on having us play, you know, golf, tennis, soccer, football. And then I got to high school. I mean, I only played 20 games a year, there. And then I went to college, and that was the longest season by far, playing 40 something games, and then pro from there. But yeah, you know, it was hockey was never forced on me. I don't know why I gravitated towards it, but I'm certainly happy I am.
I wonder if it has anything to do with the way you play the game with such energy, and almost like you can take the energy that you have and just get rid of it in 2.5 hours. When I've watched you play this league, that's what I feel about you. You think the personality might have had something to do with it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I probably wouldn't be good on the golf course, you know. So, but yeah, you know, that's just a part of my game. I don't know why my personality is like that on the ring, but I can't complain about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, I get it. I understand. And yeah, when you act like that on the golf course, it's really kind of
yeah.
What did you so outside of playing hockey, and you said how your dad wanted you exposed to all those other sports. What was second for you then?
I would say golf. Yeah, I played golf and hockey throughout high school. Yeah, it's just a fun sport. You know, it's a sport that you can play your entire life. It's great to be on the golf course, you know, playing, having some great times, great conversations. And yeah, you know, golf is just, it's just an all around fun sport.
I tell people all the time, I tell my own kids, it's a life skill, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. I mean, it is. Like, so many deals get done on a golf course, you wouldn't believe. Another thing that doesn't get tracked in life, but it happens.
Yeah,
it's a lot. I'm talking with Miles Wood, forward for the Blue Jackets. He got traded here back in June on draft night, as a matter of fact. So when you were talking about the fact when you were in high school, you didn't play a lot of games, but yet
no, I did not.
You were taken in the fourth round by the Devils. They took you 100th overall. Was there any surprise to you when that happened?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I had no idea because I was a sophomore in high school and I actually broke my foot that year. So I only got to play 10 games. And, so I had no idea that and you know, you go through the process of, you know, talking to teams and stuff like that, but there wasn't one team that stuck out to me that was like, oh, they're for sure going to draft me. But when, New Jersey, I guess, called my name, I was sitting at home and I saw my name pop up on the screen there. I was just like, this can't be real. So, but yeah, you know, I had zero idea, but I'm very happy that I was picked there and had a solid 7 years there. It was fun.
So that's funny. You don't play a lot of games in high school overall. You go to Boston College and you play 1 year and then you turn pro. Was that an easy decision for you?
You know, I think it goes back to my personality. You know, I always wanted that next thing. And my dream from, you know, since I've been 5 years old, 8 years old, I've always wanted to play professional hockey. And once I got that chance to do it, you know, I thought I could make that step. You know, the last thing that my dad was very careful with me about, he was like, Miles, if you're going to go right to the AHL, I would much rather have you play college and get that experience and, you know, play on top lines and stuff like that. So I was in a very fortunate situation where I left college and jumped right in with, New Jersey. And, like I said, I couldn't be happier. It was such a great spot to play, great people there. And, it was a fun time there.
You know, I'm glad you brought that whole thing up right there because I was asking you about your dad and getting you, you know, turning you into a hockey player, if you will.
Yeah.
What a resource that is, right? And I think that's great advice. And that, you know, I've been around this a long time. I've worked in the East Coast League and the American Hockey League. Yeah. You're absolutely right, right? I mean, you might as well play college hockey and develop and work out during the week and get some really good quality minutes.
Absolutely.
That's invaluable. So many guys wouldn't have that kind of advice.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the one thing that, you know, it was so important to have my dad go through the process and, you know, saw what he saw throughout his career. And, you know, it was just, you know, he was a huge part of who I am now and a big part of my hockey process. I'm just a very fortunate kid.
All right, before I get to talking about, you know, what you've done in the NHL and what you're looking forward to here with the Blue Jackets and all of that, I think the greatest story about you growing up in this entire process was, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, when you were 11 years old, you sent a card to Alex Ovechkin requesting an interview, and you told him if he didn't send it back, you were going to check him in the very first game that you played against him in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And that happened. I mean, you played against him. I guess you didn't check him because he had an autographed picture for you before the game, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And I think it just goes back, you know, that was just a young me. Like, the only thing that I wanted to do was just play pro hockey. And, you know, it was such a wild story. I met him right before the game and after the game as well. He was, you know, he gave me a stick too, so that's something I'll never forget. I still have it. He was such a great guy to do that, and it, you know, for sure made a impression on me.
Who passed the story along? I mean, who told him that he blew you off when you were 11 years old?
So it was the dad's trip, and right before the dad's trip, I guess they sat down with my dad and just got to know him and know my story and stuff like that, and somehow he spilled the beans. So from there, you know, people ran with it and it flourished to what the story is now.
Yeah, you can't tell people in my business that kind of stuff and keep it a secret.
I know. Yeah.
What was the actual interaction like? Because, you know, Alex Ovechkin, he can be a polarizing guy. I mean, if you're not a Capitals fan, you tend not to like him because he's such a good player. But yet last year, it seemed like the entire hockey world was pulling for him to break Gretzky's record. And, you know, I, like you, have had the good fortune of being around him in a very laid back setting in a dressing room and stuff like that. What was that meeting like for you? And I've got to ask you, like, you're new to the NHL. Were there any nerves? Was it intimidating at all?
I was starstruck. Yeah, it was, you know, I was, I think, 20 years old at that point. He was a big guy. He was much larger than what I thought in person. You know, post game, he came out with a massive red robe on, and, you know, and I was all in a suit, just so, you know, smiling ear to ear. And he just, you know, says, you know, hey, what's up type thing. Then we just had a full on conversation about where I'm from, how long I've been playing and stuff like that for us. But, you know, he was such a great guy to me, and, you know, I was very fortunate to meet him and get his stick and get a signed picture and stuff like that. So it's something that, I will not forget.
Tonight, I'm talking with new Blue Jackets forward Miles Wood on the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. More coming up right after this on 97.1 The Fan.
Whatever you're doing right now, just know that Bo Bishop is enjoying a sip of bourbon. Even if this promo is playing in the morning, no judgment.
Aw, sweet morning drinking.
The Fan.
Tonight, I'm pleased to be joined by Blue Jackets forward Miles Wood here on the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. We talked about you being drafted by the Devils, breaking in with the Devils, and you got a chance, and you said this earlier, that it was a fun time there and there were good people there. You guys were actually a pretty good team when you were there in New Jersey, too, weren't you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, my second year there, we went to the playoffs, and then we kind of went into like a 3 to 4 year drought where we hit some lows. You know, we got some first round picks in Heischer and Hughes, and they for sure turned that team around. And then my last year there, we went to the playoffs again, and then went to the second round and lost to the Hurricanes. But I rode the highs there and I rode the lows, and to see where that team is now, they're going to be a consistent playoff team. You know, it's outstanding what they've done. You know, that group is, that core group is still there. Still talk to them here and there, and the staff's still there. So, yeah, you know, it was a fun time there, but, that chapter's closed, and, you know, and now I'm on to new things now. So it's good.
When it became time that you were a free agent and you had to decide what was next, what was that process like for you to go through for the first time in your career?
Yeah, it was hard, cause I spent my whole career in New Jersey, and, you know, I just didn't know what to expect. You know, it was the first time I ever gone to a new state to play, new team to play, met new people. So yeah, that first 2 months was for sure weird. But you know, once the season started and stuff like that, you know, it was right back to playing hockey again. So now I know the ropes, and now I know what to expect as I head into a new team here. But yeah, you know, don't get me wrong, it was for sure a weird process for the first few months or so.
Yeah, well, you picked a team that had some pretty good players on that one too, by the way. I want to get your take on playing with Nathan MacKinnon, because we had Jack Johnson back here last year, and you know, Jack won the Stanley Cup in Colorado there, and he told me many stories about Nathan MacKinnon and that intensity that he has and the drive to win, not a willingness, a drive to win. What kind of an effect does that have on an entire team?
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, said it perfectly. I think the drive that he has to be who he wants to be and where he wants the team to be, I think it's absolutely insane. You know, he's the best player in the world for a reason. The way he takes care of his body, his mental health side of the game, outside of the rink, it's just things that I haven't seen before in my career. So to see it up close day in and day out, it was truly a spectacular thing to see.
All right, so you get traded to the Blue Jackets, and as you said, you know a couple of guys here, but I do want to ask you about what your perception of the Columbus Blue Jackets has been, especially over the course of the past year, because with the Johnny Gaudreau tragedy that happened a year ago, you know, it was a huge story in hockey, but the way this team kind of bonded from it and performed, you know, when you talk about tight-knit groups, last year this was really one of the best. From the outside and talking to people and just looking in and the games you played against them, you know, what did you perceive about this group that you're now a part of?
Yeah, you know, I think the first and foremost thing that stands out to me is to where the Blue Jackets were 3-4 years ago to where they are now, they've taken massive strides. I mean, they're only out of the playoffs by, I think, 2 points last year. And I think Don has done a great job, you know, getting the right players in, and they have a great, you know, core group there. And, you know, it's a hard place to play. You know, when the cannon sounds, it's time to play. And, you know, I just can't wait to get there. And, you know, the thing that I want to do is try to help this team and be a consistent playoff team. And the fact that Don, you know, traded for me, you know, I don't take that lightly at all. You know, the fact that he views me as a player that can help his team, is something that, you know, I can't wait to do and can't wait to prove. So yeah, just can't wait to get going.
Did you have any kind of a relationship with Don? Because I know he's heavily involved in the USA hockey program, as you have been. Did you know Don at all?
I did not know. Did not know Don.
Even if you didn't have a relationship with Don, he knew who you were, and probably that series between the Devils and Carolina had something to do with it that you talked about earlier.
Yeah, you know, I just can't wait to get there. You know, it was such a great conversation that we had when I was on the golf course. He's super excited to have me, and, you know, that's all you want from a GM, is just be a part of a team where someone wants you. And Don expressed that, and you know, I just couldn't be happier where I am, and super excited.
Miles, in my job, I sit around and I go through possible combinations, line combinations, and who might play together, who might work together. I mean, I don't do it every day in the summer, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I've thought about it. Like, when you guys get traded here, you think about, well, where do these guys fit in? Do you do the same kind of thing as a player? Do you look at the roster at all and say, man, I wonder where I might fit here, and I wonder who I might get the opportunity to play with, especially at the beginning.
That's something that I don't do. You only can control so much. And, you know, the only thing that I can control is just have a great camp and see where the chips fall. That's out of my control. I don't set the lineup. The players don't set the lineup. So, you know, if you can't control that side of the game, why worry about it? So that's just the way that I carry my thought process through that. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of great talent there and just can't wait to help them.
All right. So what is on tap next for you? You talked about getting your stuff moved from Colorado to Columbus, but when is Miles Wood going to put the feet on the ground here in Ohio's capital city and get ready to go?
I think I'm flying in September 6th. So just in a few weeks here.
Just in a few weeks. And then you can get in and settle in, get all that crap out of the way and just play hockey, right?
Absolutely. Can't wait for it.
Isn't it nice when all that stuff is done?
Yeah, it is.
People forget so much. Like, look, if you're moving just in regular life as a regular person, it's a pain in the neck. When you're doing it as a pro athlete, it's a real pain in the neck. At least you got to move in the summertime.
Right, for sure. Yeah. And then I got to get my car shipped out there too. So I'm not quite done yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's nothing worse than being somewhere new and not having a car.
Either. Exactly. Yeah.
Right? When's the car come? That's the important thing. You get here to the 6th. When's the car get here?
I hope it's there by the 5th, but who knows with traffic.
Exactly. Miles, thank you so much for having this conversation with me tonight. I really do appreciate it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you play your game in this lineup. I think you're going to be a really valuable addition to this team and help them get even better. So I look forward to meeting you in person. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. See you soon.
That is Miles Wood, and you heard him. He'll be here on September 6th getting ready for Blue Jackets training camp, his first in the organization. I also want to tell you, you can rock out with the Blue Jackets to kick off the 25th anniversary season. Join us on Friday, October 3rd at Kemba Live for a special anniversary concert headlined by platinum-certified band OAR. Get your tickets right now by going to bluejackets.com/OAR. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's show. Thanks to Miles Wood and Jean-Luc Grandpierre for being here with me, and thanks to you, as always, for being there. Remember, you can find out what's going on with the Blue Jackets 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just by going to bluejackets.com. Let me give you a little tease towards next week's show. Defenseman Jake Christensen, a guy that played a lot last year, and coming into this training camp, trying to figure out who's going to be part of the third pair. Jake expects that it's going to be him. He's going to be right there like he was last year. You can hear from him next week, beginning at 7 o'clock right here on The Fan. That'll do it for The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. I'm Bob McElligott. So long, and thanks for listening to 97.1 The Fan.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destined.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
With Seattle using the long ball to come out on top.
Here's the pitch. Swung on. Clopped. Left field. Sheets is back. He's at the wall. It is gone. Into the Mariners' bullpen. Gino smashes one again. A three-run home run, number 42 on the season.
That call from Seattle Sports, 7:10 a.m. as the Mariners come away with a 4-3 win. Seattle moves within a game of first place Houston in the AL West. The Astros and Rockies are about to get underway in Texas. Action continues at the U.S. Open on ESPN and the ESPN app. On the women's side, fourth seeded Jessica Pegula advanced in straight sets today. Top seed Aryna Sabalenka will be on the court tonight for her second round match. On the men's side, Novak Djokovic advanced in straight sets earlier. The American Ben Shelton will take the court in about 30 minutes.
Hey, it's Michelle Smallman, and coming up Thursday, as week one in college football approaches, has the Arch Manning hype been overblown? We'll talk about it on Sportsman Like, 6 a.m. Eastern, right here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, and ESPNU.
Florida. Fireball. to Dallas, Texas.
I'm ready.
How about this, Cowboys?
Yeah! To you. This is Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on Sirius XM Channel 80.
A top five showdown headlines, week one of the college football slate this upcoming weekend. Welcome into Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio and the all-new ESPN app. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and we have boots on the ground in Columbus, Ohio, the site of that top five showdown between Ohio State, the reigning national champions, and the University of Texas. He is Ian Fitzsimmons. I am Mia O'Brien, and we're joined now by Bobby Carpenter, former Ohio State Buckeye, as well as a Dallas Cowboys linebacker. We may sneak an NFL question or two in for Bobby. Bobby, initial impressions, given that you are in Columbus, Ohio, you did just walk off the practice field. Initial impressions today, Wednesday, before week one of that all-important showdown with the Longhorns?
Well, you know, you get all your work in Tuesday, Wednesday, and then a little more on Thursday. That's kind of it. You know, you think about all the time you've put in through training camp, and then school's getting started, and you kind of have a pseudo-game week, and now they're here. And so this is kind of the last big day before you kind of polish everything up on Thursday. And, you know, I mean, it's a lot of what you've seen before, and a lot of what you're expecting, where you know you've got a young quarterbacks on both sides, you've got some highly talented, highly skilled rosters. I think you're going to see an interesting game of cat and mouse, you know, trying to figure out exactly what these teams are going to look like, because as good as they are, there's a lot of new faces, and maybe how they're going to be deployed might even be different than what we saw last year.
Bobby, you were on the field the last time these two iconic brands collided. In Columbus, Ohio, back in 05, 2v4. I'll never forget it, standing on the field watching you guys get after it, and it came down to 2 minutes. And then Vince Young hits Lima Swede. I'll never forget it. Left corner of the end zone, touchdown, 25-22. I'm sorry to bring up that, open that wound and pour salt in it, but for any, you know, college football fan out there that looks at these interconference matchups, that's one thing as fans, we love it. What's it like as a player coming into a game like this and then being on the field for, you know, one of the best games we've seen in this century?
You know, I was talking to A.J. Hawk about this today as we're doing my podcast, and it's interesting because it really sharpens your focus all offseason. Usually you're playing this game maybe week two, possibly week three, so you have a little bit of a lead into it. Even week two, it still seems, you know, very immediate because you're working on it most of the year. But when you're playing a huge game like this right off the jump, I mean, it's easy to go through, you know, the spring, the summer, through training camp, because you're working for something so immediate, so right away, that, you know, it's a little different than it was 20 years ago from a standpoint of, hey, if you lost that game you were chasing and you needed some help. Now, like, okay, you lose this game, you could still have a bye, you could still have a home game, like all those things are still out there, but the emotion of it, of the high and the low of winning. If you win, you're going to feel like you're the best team in the country. If you lose, it's like, ah, like it's going to sting. It's going to hurt. You're going to be scouring that thing of why did you lose, knowing that when you're at a big school like this, like you call them the big state U's, I mean, the expectation is to win and to win titles and to go compete at the highest level. And the plague is why you go to a school like this. This is why you play in those games, for the spotlight to be on you and the whole country to be watching. And so it's exciting. It's exhilarating. It helps give you that extra juice preparing all off season. And I heard a stat, Ian, earlier today, that I think from that 05 game, there were 15 first-round draft picks on that field at some point during that game. And I mean, I anticipate there'll probably be similar numbers 4 years from now when we look at these teams moving forward as well.
So having said that, both these squads, and I think most logo schools now, do a remarkable job. If you lose three starters on the offensive line, your backups have gotten some burn. You know, like Barton, and those guys, they've gotten some run, at least to be calloused and leathered. So when you watched practice earlier today, not looking to give us anything, obviously, that you saw in practice, but as far as the tempo and the guys that aren't starters, that are replacing guys like Simmons and Donovan Jackson on the offensive line, or Sawyer, you know, on the defensive side, what have you seen when it comes to tempo and a sense of urgency today in practice?
Well, it's great about the offensive line. It's, you know, they lost Simmons against Oregon. You know, you lost Seth McLaughlin against the week before Indiana. And so when you lose those guys, like they had a lot of offensive line issues against the Michigan game. You were here, you see that. But those guys got galvanized through that four-game run. So you're playing elite teams, so you feel better about it. And then you look at the defensive line, which is another a place you lost a ton of talent. Four guys that were multiple-year starters, high draft picks, highly recruited players. And the good news was you go back and look and against some of the big games in Penn State and one of the goal line stands, and you see Caden McDonald out there on the field. You saw Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry, some of these guys already out there. And so, like you said, they get them a taste of it while they're maturing, and you got to rotate guys. And the best part is it keeps your guys fresh, but then also those guys are prepared and they've been in the moment. The question then becomes, Ian, are you ready to go from the situational guy who may come in for 25 to 30% of the snaps and you need to go out and they slap your helmet, good job, to be the guy that's taking the lion's share, that's taking the 60 to 80% of those snaps and is now expected to be, the big dog at the bowl. And so that's that mindset that you've got to change. And it feels like those guys are ready to take that step, but you being ready and being able to do it, you've got to actually go do that on Saturday.
Former Ohio State Buckeye linebacker Bobby Carpenter joining us here on Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio. Bobby, again, we're not asking for you to give us any secrets, give away any secrets after attending Ohio State's practice today. One storyline that I think is underrated nationally, not getting nearly enough play. Chip Kelly goes back to the National Football League. Philosophically, for those who will be tuned in on Saturday, what do you expect to see when it comes to the orchestra that is the Ohio State offense, perhaps either compared to what Chip did or compared to what we will see throughout the rest of college football this season?
Well, one of the great things about Chip, and this is what is indicative to me of any great offense or defensive coach, is you take a look at what you have. You figure out, where are we good? Where do we need to kind of protect some things? And the places you need to protect some stuff, you hide it a little bit, you don't run as much. Where are we good? We'll lean into those position groups and try to utilize those guys. And so each team kind of morphs into what you have. And so I think Brian Hartline sitting in those rooms, and I talked to Hart about this. He's a friend. He's a guy, former teammate. And he's like, I learned so much from Chip about how to lean into that. And you saw last time.